there is no denying that Walt Disney Studios wrote the book on movie animation, a genre that continues to evolve through this digital era. At the St. Louis International Film Festival this week, native St. Louis and Marlon West will be honored for the work he's done for Disney for almost a quarter century. As the head of effects at the Disney Animation Studios, he has been involved in many Disney classics such as Lion King, Pocahontas, and more recently, the Oscar-winning Frozen. He is receiving the Charles Guggenheim Cinema St. Louis Award at the St. Louis International Film Festival here and will be discussing Disney's latest animated film, Moana, at Webster University on Thursday. I spoke with him yesterday and asked about his local roots.
I grew up in the University City. I went to all of the U City schools, kindergarten through high school.
It's a long way from...
My mom still lives there.
Really? Is that going to be a nice homecoming for you later in the week?
Oh, indeed. Looking forward to being back.
So how does a young man from University City wind up working for Walt Disney Company?
I've always been interested in film and in animation in particular, and went to school in Chicago at Columbia College. I just became much more interested in working on movies. You know, I just enjoyed working, and I would start off doing educational films, and I moved out here to work on music videos and commercials and things, and someone offered me a job on an animated feature, and I enjoyed that, and it occurred to me that, you know, Disney was going to keep making animated features for a while, and that place stopped doing them, so I applied here.
You joined Disney in 1993, I believe I had that.
1993, yes, working on The Lion King.
Well, that's a pretty good start.
That was a good one. I worked on several animated films that I won't name out of respect to them on the radio that people didn't go see. And boy, it was really nice working on a film that people did go see, I got to say.
What changes have been wrought in your particular business during those 24 years with the advent of computer graphics? I mean, it's just been a sea shift, hasn't it?
It really has. I mean, I started off doing hand-drawn animation. And so, you know, The Lion King and the next eight films or so I did here in the studio were all at least perceived as a hand-drawn film. You know, we've always, composited our films digitally and did our ink and painting digitally on the films that I worked on. And the wildebeest scene in Lion King had... You know, CG wildebeest and effect, and you know, some character animation. There's always been some CG crowds in our 2D films, but when it shifted completely to films that are, you know, were CG during, like, for Chicken Little, it was a big change in the studio. And relative few of us, you know, were willing and able to make the shift from hand drawn to CG. I think as an effects artist, it was an easier shift for us because you don't really see our artwork the way you do a character animation. Our drawings were always blurred, dust, or transparent or something. So, you know, it was just all about getting the pretty pixels on the screen.
For the folks who don't quite understand what this process is and what this this kind of high-tech approach is, explain what computer graphics really do and how what you can do today that you couldn't do in 1993 when you started.
Well, you know, computer animation is much more, you know, you're creating the whole world, you know, within the computer. You're building your set. You've got cameras. You're shining them. And, you know, you're building this environment. And the characters that are being moved are, it's almost like puppetry, one frame at a time. The effects, you're using, you know, software to make simulations to create snow and water. So you're using these things to create fluids or volumes like smoke or clouds or particles like rain and snow, as opposed to drawing them on paper one frame at a time. So your characters is very careful, single frame puppetry, so to speak. You're lighting or true CG lights within this environment that you're shining them on these characters and actually getting light bouncing off of them, CG, you know, computer generated light or the simulation of light. Casting a simulation of shadows, which, you know, 15 years ago I was drawing puddle shadows under characters to make them look like they're sitting within the, you know, painted background. So it's all animation is creating something one frame at a time that doesn't exist in the real world. It's just the different tools to do it.
So it's more realistic animation. I remember seeing The Jungle Book a few months ago and just watching the fur on the animals. It looks so absolutely and totally realistic.
Oh, it's very. Now that's a film that's actually, trying to look very photorealistic. You know, the photorealistic animals and the backgrounds, and other than Mowgli, there's not a live action performer in that film. You know, there's no. I don't believe there's any animals used in that, real animals used in that film, or puppets used in that film. It is completely a CG environment.
Is today's process a much faster process than the artist's frame by frame technique?
You would think, but what happens is you just make your product more complicated, so it doesn't become much faster. Our films become much richer looking, and the level of realism and complexity that you get on screen, catches right up with the potential time that you'd be saving by using a computer.
So where do we go from here? What is next? What could be superior to what's going on now?
Well, as proud as I am of Moana, that's coming out later this month, I know 5 years from now I'll be looking at the visual complexity of Moana going, that's kind of quaint, and then look at what I can do now. So I do think the complexity of what we're getting on screen, even though we're talking about things that feel photoreal, I think that, the ability to be able to do it faster or even look more complex will just continue to grow.
Tell us a little bit about Moana. That's opening later this month, as you indicated. What are we dealing with here? What kind of animation? What kind of characters?
So Moana is set in what is present-day Tahiti, and it's a young lady who comes from a seafaring people, and some of her history has been kind of kept from her for reasons that become clear in our film. But she kind of pushes against the society that she's growing up in presently to go forward for this adventure that she goes on to kind of restore a very necessary peace to the environment that she lives in.
And what sort of challenges did this particular film pose for you and those others involved in it?
Well, as you can imagine, a film set in Tahiti and out on the open ocean, there's a ton of water in this movie. And usually we try to do a few dozen water shots maybe in an animated film, not just in this studio but around. But we had hundreds of them to do in this film. And we knew really early on that we were going to have to develop a way to actually make water faster and look really, really good, both on the shorelines of this world and out on the open ocean. So that was the big, big challenge. And then we also, it's an animated film, so of course the ocean itself is a character that interacts with Moana, and so to make a believable water as a character that doesn't look like a water creature that lives in the ocean. This is the ocean itself that interacts, that helps Moana throughout her journey. So those were the two very, very big challenges for the film.
Well, I'm sure you feel you've met those challenges if it's coming out later this month.
I hope we did. We can circle back around after you've seen it, I hope. But yes, I mean, we wanted to do right by people who live in that part of the world. And one of the things, that really is very important to our studio is we do research. And our directors, our production designers, unfortunately not me, went to Tahiti and Samoa and, met the people there and came back with a lot of footage. And then people have been on vacations in that part of the world, too. So we try to nail what shorelines look like there as opposed to shorelines here in Southern California look like. So hopefully we did. We did right by the people who welcomed us into their homes and who know that part of the world.
What is it, do you think, that fascinates people and people are so attracted to by the animated film as opposed to non-animation?
Huh, that's a really good question. I mean, speaking to our films, I mean, we try to make movies that are going to stick with people, that films that they're going to want to show their kids and they're going to want to go back to again, and to really kind of mean something. You know, the first film I ever saw in a theater was The Jungle Book there in St. Louis. My dad took me, and I remember that, and I couldn't wait to show it to my daughter. And we all go about trying to make films that actually have that type of resonance with people, that are moving, that are funny, that are scary. That, you know, not all of them are musicals, but what they all have in common is that they're trying to reach everyone, that these movies are for families. They're for the kid and everyone, and they're for kids.
That was a point that I wanted to make, that animated films used to be just for kids, but now they're definitely for adults as well.
Oh, yeah. We try to make a film that, you know, has jokes in it that may go over a kid's head. That, you know, it's not inappropriate, that you're not going to cringe. But we try to make films that people that are, you know, bringing their kids to can enjoy, or people that can go out on dates to. So we're trying to make films that resonate with everyone.
What about the other meaning that we might find in animation? And I'm thinking of what I've been reading recently about how this particular genre has really increased diversity in Hollywood films. Is that true? And if it's true, how is it true?
Well, you know, for example, a film like Moana, and I mentioned the kind of research and going and talking to people, and we try to, you know, we had a brain trust of folks from Oceania who, you know, were protective of their culture, who let us know things that, you know, they were sensitive to, and let us know the importance of stories and some of these characters. You know, one of the main characters in the film is Maui, who in that part of the world is more like, you know, Hercules, you know, to you know, Western culture, and on different islands he's a different type of character. Sometimes he's a trickster, sometimes he's a hero. But it meant a lot to actually do right by that character when people see him for the first time. And so, you know, very often we are telling stories that people are seeing their culture on screen for the first time, done in a respectful way. Certainly in this film, we are. You know, I worked on Princess and the Frog with our same directors, and we really tried to do right by the people of New Orleans, even though this is an animated film and it was a period film. But we made that film in the wake of, you know, after Katrina. And again, we went there, and people let us into their homes, and they showed us details of architecture and how people live there. And we, like I said, we try to do right by folks who, when we're setting a film in their environment.
Do you have more latitude in the animated film to do that sort of thing, and or not?
You know, compared to a live-action film, which I think beginning to end is probably 18 months, and our films beginning to end typically are like 5 years.
Hmm.
So these research trips we were talking about, sometimes they happen before a script is even written. Someone says, I want to make a film in this part of the world, and they go there, and the stories sometimes come from that trip, or characters come from that trip, or themes come from some of these research trips. You know, one of our directors is a non-swimmer, is deathly afraid of water, and he was out on the open ocean in Tahiti, and he asked for a life jacket. And the gentleman who was piloting the ship said, you know, the ocean will know that you're afraid, and we don't, you know, that's not a good thing. And so he didn't get a life jacket. He wasn't given one because it wasn't wise. But when you're in a culture where they believe that the ocean links these islands as opposed to separate these islands, or the ocean needs to be treated with respect, you know, if you're an animated storyteller, it doesn't take much to want to make the ocean a character.
Which obviously you have done in Moana. You know,
yeah.
you were involved in Lion King, and I remember hearing stories when it came out that there were a number of hidden subliminal messages that you folks put into the drawings and the animation. Was any of that going on? Does that go on? I mean, do you folks get your jollies by doing that sort of thing?
Well, I think the hidden messages that you may be talking about, something spelled in particles. I can tell you for sure, because I worked with the artist who actually did that shot, and, you know, the pollen in the air, the swirling around, you know, we do those things on several different levels. When I say levels, like pieces of paper, you can't, you know, if you're drawing, like, you know, thousands of pieces of particles, you'd actually kind of wrangle a dozen of them here and a dozen of them there. So, like, to me, the mental gymnastics it would take to actually have 11 or 12 different levels with thousands of particles trying to actually do something shady like that seems next to impossible, even if you wanted to do it. But we do put in what you might call Easter eggs in our films of characters from other movies that make very brief appearances. or caricatures of our directors in very small areas. So there are things like that in our films all the time. But yes, kind of subliminal, kind of deviant messages, not so much.
Is there any one thing that you've done or know that has been done that you could point to that some of us might recognize or wonder about?
Oh, as a, like a slight Easter egg that
yeah.
Reference from another film? You know, I know in Frozen that there's a very brief appearance of Rapunzel, you know, at the beginning of the film when people are coming for the coronation, that her and Flynn Rider make a very, very brief appearance. That's one that comes to mind.
So if people look for this sort of thing, chances are at some point they might find something if they look closely enough.
I'll say this on the radio, that I never really admit it, but there's also a scene in Frozen. Now, I'm an unapologetic comic book geek, and there is a scene in Frozen very early on where there's two shafts of light that almost make an X on the floor of the ballroom that young Elsa and young Anna visit very early on in the film. And it occurred to me that Elsa has the ability to shoot snow and ice out of her hands like a mutant from the X-Men. Huh. And now this is just my personal Easter egg. But, you know, knowing that you know, Disney and Marvel are kind of sister companies, and our very next film was a Marvel characters. In my mind, this is an early X-Men movie, Frozen. And that X on the floor that I just described is a vague Easter egg. Now, I didn't mention that to our directors or our production designer because I didn't want them to change it. But me personally, it's been always my own little kind of inside joke to myself that this is an early, early X-Men movie with songs.
All right. Well, good for you. you know, why do you call them Easter eggs? You color them, that kind of thing? You put something...
Yeah, because they're hidden. You color them and you're hidden, and they're hidden.
You mentioned early on that some of these projects take 5 years, which would limit the amount of productivity you can have year to year. How many projects do you get involved in over a course of 12 months or 20 months or so?
You know, we do basically a film a year. So there's not hundreds of people working on these films for 5 years. You know, there's a few dozen early on, you know, when I was talking about those research trips before. So, you know, you have your directors, you have maybe your production designer and your head of story. You have a few people early on. Then as the film really takes shape and gets up on reels and, you know, becomes storyboarded, then you throw more of your animators and your effects and your layout and lighting department on it. So our films probably have about a year or so of serious production, still longer than a live action film, but maybe about a year of hundreds of people working on these films as opposed to a couple dozen.
Well, I've got to tell you, radio is easier.
You know, I want to... You and the microphone.
That's right. That's right. And who knows how many people are out there or not out there. Marvin West, thank you, sir. You've been fun to talk to and certainly appreciate the time you've given us.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to coming back home.
That's native St. Louis and Marlon West. He is receiving the Charles Guggenheim Cinema St. Louis Award at the St. Louis International Film Festival here at Webster University on Thursday evening. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.